Members, I'm going to call the March 10th, 2021 meeting of the Tax Committee to order under Remote Rules 10.01. Members of the public, if you would like to look at the materials that we are dealing with today in committee, the best way to do that is go to Minnesota House of Representatives, then go to committees, and then go to taxes. And in the right-hand side, as you scroll down, you will see those materials. So with that, Ms. Griska, would you please call the roll?
Marquardt.
Present.
Marquardt, present. Lislegard.
Present.
Lislegard, present. Davids.
Davids, present.
Davids, present. Abaje. Excused. Carlson.
Carlson present.
Carlson present. Detmer. Detmer. Garofalo.
Detmer present.
Detmer present. Garofalo. Gomez.
Gomez present.
Gomez present. Her. Her.
Garofalo present. Sorry about that.
Garofalo present. Her. Hertas.
Hertas present.
Hertas present. Howard.
Present.
Howard present. McDonald. McDonald. Miller. Miller. Moran.
Present.
Moran present. Mortensen.
Present.
Mortensen present. Robbins. Robbins. Sandell.
Present.
Sandell present. Schultz.
Present.
Schultz present. Stevenson. Stevenson. Swazinski.
Swazinski present.
Swazinski present. Joachim.
Present.
Joachim present. Her.
Her present.
Her present. McDonald. Miller. Robbins.
Present.
Robbins present. Stevenson. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Griska. We do have a quorum. And everything's kind of 45 minutes behind on the schedule now. So just, we can go until 3:15, but your remaining committees, just kind of 45 minutes. So just for your scheduling for today. Representative Lislegard, would you like to move the March 9th minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lislegard moves approval of the March 9th, 2021 minutes of the Taxes Committee. Any comments, criticisms, questions? If not, members, I'm going to ask you to momentarily unmute. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed?
Aye.
The motion does prevail. The March 9th, 2021 minutes of the Tax Committee are approved. So we've got several bills on the agenda today. First up is Representative Ryer, House File 363, Revenue Recapture. Would anyone care to move Representative Ryer's bill?
I'll move, Mr. Chair.
Representative Herr moves to lay over House File 363 for possible inclusion into the omnibus report on the omnibus tax bill. So Representative Ryer, welcome to the committee. And would you please proceed? Tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to present this bill to you today. So House File 363 is a bill focused on consumer rights and the appropriate use of government services. This bill limits the use of state resources by private companies, removing the option for collecting medical debt by garnishing individuals' tax returns. Along with a similar bill, House File 1795, this legislation has bipartisan support. At present, some private nonprofit hospitals, those that lease their buildings from their county or city, are allowed to submit claims to the state of Minnesota Department of Revenue. The department diverts the person's tax return to that hospital to cover medical debt. Ambulance services are also covered by this program. The Department of Revenue receives $15 per claim, adding up to about $490,000 per year to the general fund. Bottom line, our state budget is being enriched at the expense of Minnesotans who are struggling financially. This program was set up as an expedient way to get money to hospitals when the uninsured rate was higher. Many more people were using ERs for routine care, and uncompensated care was at a crisis level. It was then expanded to ambulance services to address unsustainably low reimbursements. There are a number of problems with this. First, I don't think the government system should be used to collect non-government debt. This is an inappropriate use of our resources. Second, there are a few safeguards and consumer protections. For example, there's no verification by the Department of Revenue about the accuracy of the claim. Finally, and most importantly, this program harms the people who can least afford it, lower income working people. It's a hard place to be in our society. Many work multiple jobs to scrape by and earn just a bit too much to qualify for public health care programs. Medical debt is high. A 2020 survey estimated that 17% of Minnesotans struggle with unpaid medical bills. Too many end up in bankruptcy. Their tax returns are an annual chance to get ahead, pay some bills, or take care of pressing home maintenance. Losing it is a crushing blow and often comes as an unwelcome surprise. How much more in this time of COVID? At the same time, hospitals and ambulances are necessary and do not come to us free. Yet the healthcare system is not set up in a way that truly covers the cost of providing services. As a state, we must take on these structural problems, and I would like to work on this together with our partners in the healthcare system. And in the meantime, we need to get the burden off of the backs of the people in our state. To give you the chance to hear more about this, I've invited two testifiers to describe experiences their clients have had. I'd also refer you to the written testimony submitted by Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid and Lutheran Social Services, as well as several other committee members. Thank you. I'll look forward to your questions and ask for your support.
Thank you very much, Representative Ryer. So what I would like to do is, we do have a number of testifiers, the two that Representative Ryer listed and at least four others. So I'd like to limit that to 3 minutes apiece. And then Representative Ryer did mention one letter of support. And because we've actually encouraged letters of support along with testimony on Zoom, we want to mention that. So there's letters of support from John Colstead, Buddy Robinson, and Diane Peterson, besides the legal aid one. So with that, and I think what we'll do is we'll listen to all of the testifiers. And I would ask all the testifiers to stay on. Don't leave the Zoom after you're completed. And then members will open up for questions at that point. So first up is Jonathan Marchand, and then David Feinwax would be next. Mr. Marchand, would you introduce yourself? Welcome to the committee. Begin your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. There we go. Can you 3 minutes. I work with United Community Action Partnership. We are a community action agency located. We have corporate offices in Willmar and in Marshall, and we cover a 9-county area in west central and southern Minnesota. There are community action agencies in every county of Minnesota and of the country. Everybody has community action present in their communities. Among the programs that my consumers, I see and help consumers with is VITA. That is the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance program, where we can help consumers complete their tax returns at no charge to them, maximizing the tax return that they're eligible for, which is where I met the consumer that kind of sparked this, my participation. That they were a low-income family and they had some unplanned medical expense that was an emergency and were hospitalized and had a resulting substantial hospital bill, upwards of $6,000. They were making payments of close to about $100 a month. That was about the max that they could afford as a low-income family, yet it did not meet the minimum payment threshold for the healthcare provider. Their case was moved over to collections by the billing department, and their tax return was garnished for the payment of that outstanding medical debt. That's about as succinct as I will make the it will make the story. In the interest of time, I will yield the rest of my my time to move testimony forward.
Mr. Marchand, thank you so much for your testimony. Next, we have David Beinwex up, and then on deck, Buck McAlpin. So, Mr. Beinwex.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. I consider it a privilege to be able to provide information and participate in today's hearing. My background is in healthcare.
Would you please identify yourself first for the record?
I'm sorry. My name is Dave Feinwachs. I am a resident of St. Paul, Minnesota. I am an attorney by profession. I have some experience and practice in the healthcare area. I was for 30 years general counsel for the Minnesota Hospital Association. And for the past decade, I have been working on other healthcare issues as well. I'm here today speaking on my behalf only and on behalf of a friend. And I want to address the issue of the Revenue Recapture Act. The Revenue Recapture Act was originally created as a rate of offset statute. If people owed the government money and the government owed these people money, the government could basically offset what they had coming to them by taking and capturing tax refunds, whether they be income tax or property tax. And that was the original intent. Over time, the statute has become changed, perverted, if you will, to allow select private corporate interests to use the Minnesota Department of Revenue as essentially a free collection agency, circumventing due process, collection costs, and a lot of other things which basically work a real hardship on the people who are at the receiving end of this. Which brings me to my friend Glenn. Glenn is a friend of mine. I've known him for many, many years. Glenn works very hard. He works two jobs. Most days he works 7 days a week. Sometimes if he's lucky, 6 days a week. His two jobs pay between $12 and $14 an hour. Glenn is deeply in debt. Before the pandemic began, I got a text from Glenn saying that he was feeling ill and he was having trouble breathing. Naturally, I went to his home. I took one look at him. I could see he was clearly in distress. I put him in my car and took him to a Park Nicollet Urgent Care Center. Park Nicollet is part of Health Partners. They took a look at him and said, he's going to the hospital. I said, I've got my car right here. Methodist Hospital is nearby. They said, no, he needs an ambulance. We've got to call an ambulance. He was taken by ambulance to Methodist. Emergency surgery occurred, 5 hours worth. They saved his life. The care was excellent. Glenn was left with a mountain of debt. As always, concerned about finance and just squeaking by, and by the way, Glenn is the victim of garnishment from a number of other things too. His paychecks are garnished every time they're issued. What little bit is left, he cashes them at Walmart because he doesn't even have a bank account. He was concerned about the cost of preparing his tax return that year. I said I would do it because it was a simple return. I did it. He was supposed to get $400 or $500 back from the state of Minnesota. Instead, he received a letter saying that his income tax refund had been seized for the benefit of the medical services, including the ambulance services that he had received. He asked me how this could be. I told him that Minnesota has a Revenue Recapture Act law, which was modified to allow private multi-billion dollar corporate interests, like Health Partners, to seize tax returns, and that is what happened to him. He was profoundly impacted by this because Glenn, like so many people in his position, at least once a week asked the rhetorical question, do I put gas in the car to go to work or do I eat tonight? And it's rhetorical because the car always wins.
Mr. Feinwax, could you kind of finish up, please?
Yes. At any rate, because of the hardship this works on my friend, I am supportive of House File 363, and the structural problems in our healthcare system will not be addressed by preying upon the weakest among us. Thank you.
Mr. Feinwax, thank you for sharing those personal stories. Next, Buck McAlpin, and then Joshua Fisher on deck. Mr. McAlpin, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Mr. Chair and members, Buck McAlpin. I'm here on behalf of the Ambulance Association of Minnesota. We represent nearly 300 ambulances, large and small, and all denominations of private, non-governmental, and hospital-based. First of all, I've had a very nice conversation with Representative Ryer about her bill, and I think we can both agree that the payment system is probably a bigger issue than the revenue recapture system and how we get paid for EMS. But about 10 years ago, when all ambulances licensed under Statute 144E, which is a term we use often in the entire ambulance industry, we've tried to, in the EMS industry, not to look at your affiliation as a not-for-profit or private. It's about who operates the ambulance service and how we keep that ambulance service afloat financially. Years ago, we had a problem with uncompensated care, which we still do today. An average ambulance in Minnesota collects about 40 cents on the dollar. About 60% of that's bad debt. We're number 11 on the list of revenue recapture of who gets the claims when it gets down to us for money to providers. And a few things in the conversation about how the process works. I do think the Department of Revenue audits the program quite aggressively because we get lots of feedback that our providers are being audited. Most folks receive four or five notices, or it's 5 to 6 months before they're even put into this program. There's quite an arduous process. Revenue has us follow to even utilize this. And the collection companies, I've heard folks refer to collection companies. Collection companies cannot utilize this or third-party billing companies. It can only be utilized by the ambulance provider licensed in the state to submit the revenue recapture claim. So the department, and most importantly, the customer that uses this program or the patient in the ambulance or the hospital has a recourse back to that provider if they are inappropriately put into the revenue recapture program. So we always look forward to continuing the conversation around uncompensated care. But as we come off the last year of COVID, the industry took about a $48 million hit in revenue. We haven't came to the legislature asking for money for that. We received very little federal and state money from the COVID relief stuff. So to remove this tool right now would be pretty damning to the ambulance industry. Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I'll stand for questions at the end.
Mr. McAlpin, thank you so much. Next, Joshua Fisher, and then James McLean. Mr. Fisher, welcome to the committee, and please proceed. Identify yourself, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you today. My name is Josh Fisher. I'm the director of Stevens County Ambulance Service. We're based out of Morris, Minnesota. I've been in the EMS industry for 24 years, and I suppose it should be noted that I am not one of the private multi-billion dollar businesses that was referred to in previous testimony. We are coming off as an ambulance service. We're coming off as one of our most challenging years ever with the COVID-19 pandemic. Increased risk, increased cost, increased calls for service, and decreased revenues. In the face of inadequate reimbursement, removing any ambulance service from the revenue recapture program is but yet another nail in the coffin, if you will, of rural EMS. It puts the health and safety of our communities, your constituents, at risk. I understand the financial burdens that our patients face, and I understand the trouble. I understand the health insurance, or the lack thereof, continues to be a challenge that we need to address. And I understand that it may seem like the financial impact of this legislation on healthcare entity may be minimal, but I can tell you that for a small, rural, independent ambulance service that does not receive any taxpayer subsidy like ours, that is ready to respond 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, even the smallest decrease in funding is significant when it's considering our ability to continue replacing outdated equipment, paying our frontline healthcare workers, replacing ambulances, and continuing to serve our communities at a level that they expect, deserve, and need. Quite frankly, it ensures our ability to keep the lights on and respond when that 911 call comes in. I could share with you many examples of cases where patients have contacted me regarding their bill for services that we have provided. We have agreed to payment plans, interest-free. We have agreed to discounts, and in many cases, complete forgiveness of their bill. All they have to do is respond to our requests. All they have to do is pick up the phone and call me. When they don't do that, when we can't contact them, when they ignore their financial obligations for the services we provide, then we do utilize the additional collection methods that are available to us, including the revenue recap program, because we depend on that revenue. As a small business, we depend on that revenue. It is done responsibly. It is done with the utmost consideration for the variety of situations and challenges that our patients might be faced with, because we take very seriously our obligation to provide not only for the patients that we have served, but the patients that we are going to need to serve in the future. And I'm sure I sound like a broken record here, but the reality of it is that we need proper and adequate reimbursement for the readiness and services we provide so that we can continue providing those services. This legislation further inhibits our ability to serve our communities. I would ask that you support the health and safety of all Minnesotans and oppose this legislation and explore ways to provide adequate funding for our frontline EMS agencies and workers across Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fisher. Were you getting a call there for service? Hopefully.
That was an ambulance call. I am on call today, too.
Oh, geez. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, Mr. McLean. Please state your name and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is James McLean. I'm Director of Government Relations for Regions Hospital and Health Partners Care Delivery. Regions is the only level one trauma center and burn center in the East Metro. It's a former county hospital turned public-private partnership that maintains the role of the largest safety net hospital in the East Metro, providing approximately $20 million worth of charity care annually. In order to maintain that safety net function, we need to be good stewards of limited resources we have and do our best to ensure payment for services when a patient has the financial ability to do so. We use revenue recapture as a last resort in the collection process after exhausting other options, including offering financial assistance while the patient is in the hospital, multiple checks to determine whether the patient qualifies for our charity care policy, providing every uninsured patient assistance in applying for government programs if eligible, mailing at least 4 statements to the patients after discharge, and multiple attempts at phone contact with our financial counselors that can assist in setting up a payment plan before any collection action is taken. This all happens over a period of months post-discharge. On top of that, there is an appeal process built into the revenue recapture program where the patient can request a hearing up to 45 days after they receive notice that a bill has been submitted for revenue recapture. Regions does not submit any bills for revenue recapture for patients that are at or below 200% of federal poverty guidelines, and we offer financial assistance on a sliding scale well above that threshold. We appreciate Representative Ryer and other members' concern and desire to protect consumers. We believe we have put many safeguards in place to ensure revenue recapture is used appropriately, and will continue to work to address those concerns. As a hospital system, we embrace continuous improvement. But losing this option for collection of payment for healthcare services without some other mechanism to address uncompensated care, which remains an issue for Regions, will be a major challenge for the hospital and other safety net providers. And I know and appreciate Representative Ryer is willing to work on that issue of uncompensated care and providers that are struggling with it. I just hope we can advance some of those alternative ideas before we remove this tool. And of course, in the meantime, we are committed to working with the author and other proponents of this bill to ensure appropriate safeguards are in place to protect consumers of healthcare services, as well as our most economically vulnerable patients. And I just want to make a quick note. A previous testifier mentioned Methodist Hospital, which is part of Health Partners Family of Care, but it is not eligible to participate in the revenue recapture program, as it does not lease space from a government entity, so is not a participant, nor are other Health Partners facilities or clinics. It's Regents Hospital that has the ability to do this by virtue of the facility being owned by Ramsey County, which we leased from them. And then also two recent additions to Health Partners Family of Care, Hutchinson Hospital and Olivia Hospital in Western Wisconsin, which are also both former county hospitals and still lease their space from the county, that are able to participate in revenue recapture. Thank you.
Mr. McLean, thank you so much. Before I go to members' questions, just want to mention there's a couple other letters of support I didn't mention from Rick Rayburn and Sharon Schmidt. And then also the fiscal note for 22-23, it would be $1.365 million. And for 24-25, the cost would be $1.348 million. So roughly about $1.4 million, $1.35 million. So with that, Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. And I just wanted to say real quick that thank you to Rep. Ryer for bringing this forward. This is a really tough bill, and I am a co-author of this bill, and I thought about it long and hard. And this is, the situation is not about not wanting to support our healthcare industry, our nonprofit partners who do charity work within this, those who are already struggling now. The fact of the matter is that should the state be engaging in being a debt collector for the entities at least space from them? And I think that at the end of the day, we as a state are here to protect people, not to garnish their wages and to put them in a position that could further harm them financially. And so though I understand where our ambulance services are coming from, what Health Partner is speaking to, it is not the issue of which that, we should not be helping them, that they should not be collecting on those who are not paying their expenses, but really is the state the right avenue to do this? And so I just had a really quick question for Representative Ryer that does the state do this revenue recapture for any other, industry or other entities than the healthcare sector?
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Herr. It is restricted only to public revenue recapture apart from this. So there are no other private forms of business that participate in revenue recapture.
Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt, and thank you for that response, Representative Ryer. I think that that's really important for us to keep in perspective, that should we as a state, right, this is an ethical question for us, is should we be the ones doing this? And so I appreciate you bringing the bill forward, Representative Ryer.
Thank you. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for either the testifiers or for nonpartisan staff. Are these services, are they subject to the provider tax?
With someone, Mr. McAlpin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, yes, most of them are. The only ones that are not in Minnesota are true volunteer ambulances, and the definition of that is if you have one or more paid full-time staff. Otherwise, the volunteer services are exempt.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman and Mr. McAlpin, in the case of where someone does not pay for whatever reason, do you still have to pay the provider tax to the state of Minnesota?
Mr. McAlpin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, yes, we pay the provider tax, not on the charges, but the total collection. So in that case, no.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman and
Representative Garofalo,
to the author of the bill, in light of that, if we were to not allow them to recapture this revenue to the author of the bill, do we want to at least forgive them the requirement to pay the provider tax to the state of Minnesota? Because right now the revenue note, it doesn't list anything. There's no fiscal impact for the provider tax. Is that something that you've considered to the author of the bill?
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo. That would be something that I would say we should just take in and discuss separately as alternatives. As I said in my comments, I do think we need to be looking at structural changes. We need to be looking at all of the different options, and we need to be removing this burden from consumers. So certainly that can be at the table as a consideration, as a possibility.
Mr. Chairman, are we laying this over or voting on this today?
We would be laying this over, Representative okay. Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if I could ask a question of Mr. McElpine.
You may.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. McElpine, could this endanger the fiscal solvency of some of our rural ambulance services?
McElpin?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, we just had the Renville ambulance closed down because of staffing and financial resources. I think to Mr. Fisher's testimony, and we have a rural sustainability committee that meets often. I can't sit and tell you that it would impact large EMS systems in the state, but many of the large EMS systems also have their own independent budgets as they've picked up open ambulance services to cover territory in rural Minnesota. But it would be an impact.
Chair Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. McElpin. I'm concerned at the fiscal stability of our rural ambulance services, and this doesn't help. This would hurt our rural ambulance services. So I would hope that the author, it seems like there's some disagreement here on this bill. I would hope that the author would work with the affected parties and see if they can work something out where everybody wins with this bill. Not everybody wins. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this bill doesn't prevent providers from going after unpaid debt. So they can still use and not use the state to go after unpaid claims. They can still use other channels to get reimbursed. What this bill does is that the state should not be doing that work. So I think that sounds like there's some confusion about that. But also, you know, this just points out how much work we have to do to reform healthcare when there's so much burden on our low-income families, especially now during the pandemic, that they're gonna lose income potentially. And potentially some of these bills may not be accurate, but we're collecting on them before they can be adjudicated. So there's so much work to do, and I'm really grateful Representative Ryer is taking this on, and there's been a lot of support in my community for this bill, and I hope members can learn more about it and ask questions now, and we can pass it in our tax omnibus bill. I also want to encourage members to read a book that I've assigned to my students in my class, but it's called The Price We Pay. It's by Dr. Mark Macquarie, and there's a whole chapter on this issue, and I encourage members to read that book, The Price We Pay. Thank you, Chair Marquardt.
An assignment from Professor Schultz. All right. any other Representative Detmer?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe a question for the author of the bill.
You bet.
If it passes, would it result in even more uncompensated care?
Representative Ryer, do you need more? Did you have a thought for that, Representative Detmer, why that might be?
I'm just asking you, with passing this piece of legislation, would it result in more uncompensated care?
Representative Ryer is.
Chair Marquardt, Representative Detmer. I am going to admit that the logic is not connecting for me on how not requiring people's tax returns to be withheld leads to uncompensated care. And I'd, echo Chair Marquardt's request is if I would like to hear it in story form. I'm just missing the point. Tell me how this, what this would look like, please.
Very I'm good. Representative Detmer, do you have kind of a thought why that might happen? I think that might help address the question.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm looking at some statistics from 2018, the most recent year for the information is available. Minnesota hospitals provided $788 million of compensated care. So that's just a fact that's out there. And we're talking about ambulance services and so forth. That can be a real problem for them also. Just a comment.
Yeah, so I think if I've got you right there, Representative Detmer, the fact that the state wouldn't be involved might actually increase uncompensated care that
correct.
Wouldn't get paid otherwise. Is that
correct?
Would that be, Representative Ryer, any thoughts on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, that does clarify it, not that it would cause more people to go out and get care. That's arithmetic that seems reasonable. However, I would still say that doesn't get at the root cause. The problem is still that the system isn't well set up to pay for the legitimate costs, and that regardless of some impact on uncompensated care, it's not right to put it on the shoulders of people who, by and large, are not the poorest of the poor, because as Mr. McLean pointed out, there are income safeguards, but the people who, the working class, the people who are working the multiple jobs scraping by, that's who would be affected. Those are your constituents. Those are my constituents. My constituents like this, and I have to imagine that yours, if they were getting their tax returns, would be pleased with that as well.
Representative Detmer, anything further?
No.
Thank you very much. Last question, Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. I just want to respond to Representative Detmer's question about uncompensated care. This may not affect uncompensated care because you have other avenues to go after that debt. It's just so I would not equate those two. Also, at least for our nonprofit hospitals, they have a responsibility to show community benefit, and they use uncompensated debt for part of that. For their nonprofit status, they have to file these 990 forms with the IRS. So part of that uncompensated care and part of that nonprofit privilege is to provide a community benefit, and part of that is providing care for those who cannot afford it. And so I don't think that this bill is going to change their uncompensated care.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. All right, Representative Ryer, I think questions have been asked. Have you got some closing comments on House File 363?
Chair Marquardt, thank you. Yes, I do. I'll keep it brief. I know we're all trying to play catch up today. But I appreciate the diversity of perspectives that have been brought here today. To me, we have the opportunity during this interim to say, how do we make this even better? The concept is right. How do we look at all of the pros and cons and refine it as needed? And I appreciate everybody's engagement with that. You're welcome to reach out and let's have more conversation. And in the meantime, let's look out for Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Herr renews her motion to lay over House File 363 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Ryer. Have a good rest of the day.
You too.
Next on the agenda is House File 1893, Representative Sandsted. Who would care to make that motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lessegaard moves House File 1893 to be laid over for possible inclusion into the House Tax Omnibus Bill. Representative Sandsted, welcome to the committee. Please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, members. House File 1893 would provide a retroactive refundable sales tax exemption on materials, supplies, and equipment for a pair of upcoming projects from the Hibbing Public Schools starting later this spring. Improvements are being made to the Cheever Field Athletic Center at an estimated cost of $4.6 million, with the materials, supplies, and equipment estimated to be $2 million. The district is also adding an early childhood family education center to an elementary school with a total cost of approximately $9.5 million and materials, supplies, and equipment estimated to cost $3.4 million. According to the revenue estimate, the sales tax exemption would save the district $140,000 in fiscal year 22 and approximately $230,000 in fiscal year 23. Our school districts have been greatly impacted during COVID, and while it's important to help our learners rebound now, we also need to look ahead to ensure that we can deliver the best experience possible for our students in the future. This vision includes important capital projects to help better serve our communities, like these two projects in the Hibbing District. While families and students deserve updated modern facilities, property taxpayers in our region are already stretched thin. By issuing this sales tax exemption, we can help the Hibbing Public School District meet its mission while helping maintain the overall financial health of the district. And with me today, I have Superintendent Rick Aldrich from the Hibbing School District.
Very good. Thank you very much, Representative Sandstead. Before we go to Richard Aldrich, I would like to say that back before Zoom, you were allowed 3 minutes of testimony for every 100 miles traveled. But now without that, you're limited to 3 minutes, because that is one benefit, actually, and I hope we actually continue this, even when we go back to normal, is that we allow this avenue for testifiers to be able to do this somehow on a Zoom hybrid approach, because we've had people travel 500-600 miles for 5 minutes of testimony. So this, I think, will increase accessibility for folks from far away, if you will, to also be able to testify and participate. So with that, Superintendent Aldrich, welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself. And I know you're more than 100 miles away, but you still got 3 minutes.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you very much to Representative Sandstead for her great introduction to our exciting facilities projects that we have here in Hibbing. My name is Rick Aldrich, and I'm the superintendent of the Hibbing Schools. The Hibbing Schools have two facilities projects that will begin construction as soon as ground thaws up in northern Minnesota, which doesn't necessarily happen as quickly as it does in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. But in the upcoming months, we will have two facilities projects that will break ground. The first is an addition to our current Washington K-2 elementary that will house our early learners. It will include classroom space for our early childhood, school readiness, and Head Start students, parents, and staff. The total project cost is $9.5 million, and the potential savings in this bill is conservatively near $250,000 in tax savings. The second project that we have is to refurbish our current Cheever Field and Track sports complex. The overall cost of that project is $4.6 million, and the potential tax savings on that project with this support of this bill is nearly $150,000. Neither project is a voter-approved referendum-based project. Rather, the funding for this project is a budgeted district allowable expense utilizing our existing lease levy and our other maintenance dollars. So this is not an extra ask to our taxpayers. This is a project that my board feels strongly about, both projects, and we're willing to step up and pay for it and get it done. The tax savings from both projects will allow us to enhanced programming for all of our students, both academically and in athletics. The projects total approximately 18 months of construction. They will create approximately 100,000 hours of labor jobs, and in the long term will create 10 full-time permanent teaching and support positions here within our district. The Hibbing schools are excited to have this opportunity to bring these projects to our region. Both projects will enhance our educational system as well as serve the community. So I want to thank you again to members of the committee for the opportunity. Thank you again to Representative Sandstedt for her great introduction. And I yield back to you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. And the revenue note is very close to just what the superintendent had estimated, $370,000 over those two projects. So thank you so much. Members, any questions for Superintendent Aldrich or Representative Sandstedt?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Detmer.
Just a comment, and I would hope next time, Superintendent, that you have the background instead of your office, maybe your beautiful auditorium you have there at Hibbing High School. I taught at Forest Lake, and I brought our wrestling, and I was a head wrestling coach, and I brought our team up there. And I would always take the opportunity to take them in to see your auditorium. I call it a theater, but it's a beautiful facility, and you have a beautiful school too. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the testifier. You know, I have some concerns about the bill, but we really like the bill author, so I think it's okay. I think we can do this. So. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Superintendent, I've also been in your high school, and not only the auditorium, but the hallways with photographs of math teams and the outstanding academic accomplishments of your students was really fun to see. I have a bill coming up similar to Representative Stanseed's, a request that sales tax on public buildings be relaxed. Does that money, that savings go back into the construction program, or does that just go back to the taxpayers who would otherwise pay that sales tax?
Superintendent Aldrich.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. In both instances, you know, we would be budgeting to put that money back into the project, would be our plan. And again, since this is a general fund expense and not necessarily a voter approved expense, it's, you know, we have a running checkbook here, and this would just help add to our total general fund total for the school year.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Superintendent.
Representative Gomez.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm going to continue my tradition of asking maybe dumb questions that I don't know the answer to and maybe should. Like, I'm wondering if maybe somebody and maybe Mr. Williams or somebody in research can explain the like refundability part. I guess when I think of a refundable, I guess we usually talk about like a refundable tax credit, which means that if the tax liability is less than the amount of the credit, then you'd get basically a cash payment, but this is talking about a refundable deduction or a refundable exemption. So I don't know if Ms. Hagler can explain that to
me. Let me turn that over to Ms. Hagler. Ms. Hagler?
Mr. Chair and Representative Gomez, so this it's not quite the same as income tax, like a deduction. The refundable just refers to the fact that the sales tax was paid upfront, and now they apply to the Department of Revenue for a refund. And part of it is because maybe they've already purchased some supplies and that's why it's retroactive, but the refundability just means taxes paid and then you get the refund later.
Representative Gomez.
Oh, thank you. So it just means refundable like in the English language sense, not refundable in the like tax world sense, which is what confused me. So thank you so much.
That's right.
Appreciate that.
Thanks, Ms. Hagler. Thank you, Representative Gomez. Seeing no one else and anyone else on the Zoom meeting, we didn't get anyone from the public that wanted to testify. So Representative Sandstedt, closing comments.
Thank you for your time in the committee today, and I would appreciate your support for this bill as it moves forward.
Thank you very much. Representative Les Legarde renews his motion to lay over House File 1893 for possible inclusion into the House tax omnibus bill. Thank you very much. Thank you, Superintendent. Next, we have House File 1561. Representative Les Legarde, would you like to move your bill?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Les Legarde moves House File 1561. Be laid over for possible inclusion into the House tax omnibus bill. Representative Les Legarde, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm here today to present House File 1561, a request for sales tax exemption for construction materials in a building, a new high school, and two new elementary schools for Rock Ridge School District, which includes Virginia, Eveleth, and Gilbert in my district in northern Minnesota. Rock Ridge is the product of a collaboration effort between Virginia, Gilbert, and Eveleth. And if I could say that that is something that truly incredible when you have communities that were so close and rivals, when they come together to put the children and the education before that pride in each community, that says a lot. And that's why this project actually was able to happen by voters stepping up and putting the kids first. The new facility will feature a new high school career academy, teaching critical thinking, communication, collaboration, creativity, citizenship, character, entrepreneurs, and global competence. This school collaboration and the future of this new district is incredibly exciting for our district. House File 1561 will save an estimated $3 million, which will be used to purchase classroom materials, desks, chairs, tables, whiteboards, storage cabinets, smart boards, and more. The money will be reinvested into the project and will make this high school and elementary a project for the ages. And with me today is Rock Ridge Superintendent Noelle Schmidt. And let me note that Noelle Schmidt is not originally from the Iron Range. He came in with an outside perspective of new ideas, a new way to think. And he had the will and the courage, and I mean courage, to go before many different bodies of people that saw things a certain way, and change is difficult. And for this project to get where it is today, it took people to see. And Noelle Schmidt was one of the individuals that really brought people together. So it is my honor to welcome Superintendent Noelle Schmidt.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt.
Thank you. So before we go to you, I'm sorry I was muted there for a second, but before we go to Superintendent Schmidt, Representative Les Legarde was very correct on the revenue note, $2.7 million for the first biennium and about $220,000 into the next biennium. So Superintendent Schmidt, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, thank you, Chair Marquardt and members of the Tax Committee. My name is Noelle Schmidt, Superintendent of the Rock Ridge Schools. And thank you for allowing me the opportunity to be here on a request for a sales tax exemption for a new high school and two new elementary schools in the new Rock Ridge School District. Let me get straight to the point as to why you should consider our humble request, because we are one of the most extraordinary educational stories in Minnesota that you have never heard of. The background is pretty simple. Our kids live in a high poverty county, number 5 out of 87 in the state of Minnesota. We also, our kids live in the worst growing population area in the entire state of Minnesota, and that's been true since 1970. However, what's happening in the communities up here is absolutely remarkable. Briefly, here's what's happened. Two completely separate school districts, Virginia, Eveleth, Gilbert, they both simultaneously passed public votes to build a new high school based on career academies, two new elementary schools. This is one of the largest bond referendum public votes in the history of the state of Minnesota on a per pupil basis. The linchpin is a career-based high school academy, project-based learning, 21st century learning, critical thinking skills, and our community members
They wanted school to be more relevant, more purposeful, and to be more rigorous for the kids who live in the area, $178 million. Then after that, the communities did another vote on what should we call ourselves, what should the mascot be, and what should the colors be. Then the communities had two more public votes in two complete different elections, voting to consolidate. First school consolidation in 15 years in the state of Minnesota, one of the rare consolidations because it was not done out of financial reasons. The community was simply interested in improving education opportunities for the kids up here. I mean, who does this? Who votes to build a new high school, two elementaries, and then you pick your colors, mascot, and everything else, and then you vote to consolidate? Nobody, except up here, they did vote to do this. However, the construction costs up here are absolutely extraordinary. There's just simply a lack of buildable land. We kind of laugh internally because we are putting these buildings on the best of the poor site locations we have. It's not like where I grew up in Southwest Minnesota. Flat farmland, build it there, you're good to go. There is rock and it is everywhere. There are wetlands and they are everywhere. It's costly to blast the rock, hammer, chip, remove, haul, crush rock. On your flyer, I included two pictures. Those are not doctored pictures. That is literally what our construction crews have to go through to build the new buildings. And that big, massive pile of rock is still there if you want to take a look at it. So we're here today because our construction guy, Pat Gallagher, Krause Anderson, he's telling us $5 million we're paying extra because of site costs. So we're here today asking for a sales tax exemption for it'll be about $2.73 million to help negate some of our extraordinary construction costs. All we're really asking is after all these public votes, just give us a level playing field for our kids and our communities. And you heard where the money's going to be used for. I won't repeat that. You know we have a high poverty area. We know we have declining population loss. However, we're really asking for the sales tax exemption to just give us a level playing field so we can take care of this. And I also included a picture of Danny, the very first Rock Ridge letter jacket in the flyer you've got. Because last thing I'll say, in a few years, Rock Ridge Public Schools, you're going to hear about one of the most famous success stories in Minnesota that everyone will have heard about. Thank you.
Superintendent Schmidt, that sounds amazing, what you've done in the communities coming forward, just with the Career Academy and everything. Sounds like an extraordinary project. So congratulations. Members, do we have questions? If not, Representative Leslie Gard, I don't know how you top that superintendent there, but do you have any final closing comments?
A wise man builds his house on a rock, and that's exactly what we did.
Would you like to renew your motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lesgard moves to lay over House File 1561 for possible inclusion into the House tax omnibus bill. Thank you very much. Thank you, Superintendent Schmidt. Next on the agenda, House File 1813. Representative Joachim, would you care to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would care to move House File 1813 before the committee in hopes of possible inclusion in a future bill.
All right. Representative Joachim moves House File 1813 to be laid over for possible inclusion into the House tax omnibus bill. Welcome to your committee, and please proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for hearing House File 1813 today. This bill would provide sales tax relief on construction materials for five projects at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. The bill is similar to legislation we've already heard in committee today and other days regarding sales tax exemptions for critical public infrastructure. And members, MSP is definitely critical public infrastructure. A recent economic impact study showed MSP produced $16 billion in annual economic activity and generated $1 billion in local, state, and federal taxes. Between the different airlines, concessionaires, car rentals, and other shops, there are 20,000 employees at MSP daily, and the airport supports nearly 90,000 jobs in Minnesota. Many of those jobs would likely not locate in Minnesota if not for MSP and the international and domestic air service it provides. In short, the MSP is a major contributor to Minnesota's tax dollars and the state's economy. It has done much without any reliance on Minnesota's general fund. I'm sure that members are aware our airport has been hit hard by this pandemic. They're here today to ask for an exemption on sales tax on construction material for a limited amount of time on a small number of projects. This by no means will help them recover fully from the economic impact of COVID, but will help the airport move forward with key maintenance and improvement projects while creating additional construction jobs for the aviation as the aviation industry recovers. Today I have with me Mitchell Killian, the Associate Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Metropolitan Airport Commission, to provide a little more detail on the projects as well as the effect COVID has had on the MAC.
Thank you very much, Representative Joaquin. Before we go to Mr. Killian, I want to report the revenue estimate is $2.82 million in this biennium and a little over $2 million, $2.04 million into the next biennium. So, Mr. Killian, welcome to the committee. If you would please identify yourself and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chairman Marquardt and members of the committee. Mitch Killian with the Metropolitan Airports Commission. What I'd like to do is quickly give you a snapshot of how things are going out here at MSP, talk to you a little bit about our capital program overall, and then the specific projects that are in the bill. If it's all right, I'd like to just proceed, Mr. Chairman.
Please proceed.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'd like to make sure and say that, you know, some of the news reports right now you hear are talking about upticks in air traffic and things, and although they're upticks, I want to make sure you understand how small they are, and they're at holidays and things like that. The true reality is we are still only seeing about 40% of our normal passenger traffic at MSP Airport. That's important for you to understand because the revenues that are driven to run this place, operations and capitals, are derived largely from passenger traffic. So with only 40% of our traffic, our revenues are significantly down. Last year, we were down over $215 million in revenue at MSP. And to give you one pointed story that kind of helps you understand that, we typically annually collect over $100 million in parking revenue to help run this place. Last summer and spring, when I was watching revenues come in from parking, instead of on days where we would normally have $300,000 to $400,000 a day in revenue, we were seeing parking receipts of $7,000 and $8,000 a day. So significantly impacting the revenue that we use to run the place. I'd like to point out a couple other pieces. Our concessions revenue right now, our concessions, were over 50% of our concessionaires are still closed. And the ones that remain open, revenues are significantly down because of the passenger traffic. That's important to understand because we don't just charge a square footage charge on those leases. The way that we get our revenue is from a percentage of the gross revenue that the concessionaires make. So when they're not making any money, we're not making any money to help pay for the place. Right now, we're still down 60 routes total that are completely off the books right now at MSP. International traffic-wise, you might not be aware of this, but other than Amsterdam, which is struggling and we have a flight to Amsterdam, we have no transoceanic international service right now. So you might have watched us cut ribbons recently for Dublin and Seoul flights. They're not operating anymore. Reykjavik, London, Paris, Frankfurt, Tokyo, all not operating at this time. All that helps to drive the revenue that runs the airport. And so we continue to move on with that lack of revenue. I want to just tell you a little bit about our capital projects out here, just so you understand the programs. I think a lot of legislators don't understand that on an annual basis, MAC has between $200 and $500 million in capital construction annually. And I like to tell you that because I think about your own bonding bill. We do $200 to $500 million annually in capital projects. This year, we were planning to do $350 million in construction before the pandemic hit. We've cut that back this year to about $180 million of essential kind of projects that we have going on. Those projects are continuing because some of them are funded through the Airport Improvement Program out of Washington, D.C., a FAA program that helps to do capital projects across the country on airports. Some are because we have bonding money already in the bank, And so those projects are continuing on because we already had issued the bonds and have the bonds for them. And then finally, some are just general maintenance and operations that kind of have to go on that we have going on. So we're still planning and trying to keep going forward with about $180 million in projects. And so what we're asking of the committee and of the legislature and the state is to not charge us sales tax on our construction materials during this difficult time. The projects that we included in this bill are kind of essential projects that we took and put together to present to you. One is a Terminal 1 roof. It's a roof replacement for T1 that you all see, that corrugated roof that we have. A baggage claim rehabilitation. The passenger arrival and departure areas that we've already begun and that we're continuing on with, the remodels that you've been seeing out there, a significant material storage building, and a fire station. All total, over the years that we're kind of looking for the sales tax exemption, it's over $200 million worth of work that we're going to do. And to help us, we're asking for about $4.5 million, real rough estimate, in a sales tax exemption that the state wouldn't charge us to keep them going forward. And let me close with this, and then if you have any questions, of course, is I know that you've got a lot of important sales tax exemption bills before you. I just heard them today. I've been watching the committees, and I see a lot of them that you have. But I'd like to make a distinguishing difference of this one as you look at it. This place is a huge economic generator for the whole state of Minnesota. And this little thing that the state can do, I wanted to say help fuels that economic generator, but it's all you're doing is helping to prime and keep this thing going as we come out of the pandemic. And so we'd ask for your support of the bill. Chairman Marquardt, members, and Representative Joachim, thanks for presenting it for us.
Thank you very much, Mr. Killian, for that background information and also on where the budget is right now. Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. I had a chance to meet with Mr. Killian, and he really made a strong point in that. One of the questions I had for him when we met was, if you could differentiate the types of revenues you have from other municipalities. Obviously, the airport has a lot of different revenue sources that are currently significantly diminished than what a city can produce in terms of revenues from a property tax base. So there is a uniqueness to this sales tax exemption request. I think we need to be taking into consideration to differentiate it from, say, what cities have brought forward. Projects, I think, match up pretty well. A fire station, some other municipal services that are going to help the airport compete once business starts to pick up again. But, there is a timeliness to this. There is a sense of time is of the essence for these projects to get underway. So appreciate Mr. Killian's testimony today and making that clear distinction.
Thank you very much. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Killian for your testimony. And Representative Joachim for bringing this bill forward and being the chief author. I just encourage the committee and you, Chair, to maybe put this up high on your priority list. We know that the airport in and of itself is kind of is an economic engine for the state of Minnesota and will continue to be and doing the good job that they do. And it just makes good sense. I did have a chat with him as well, and they have a good program put forth. I like the fact that they're tying it to certain projects, which will expire. And then we all know that the continued work and the millions of dollars that will continue to pour into the airport throughout for many, many years is great for the state. And I think this is the first time they've come to the state of Minnesota asking for some help. So, Mr. Chair, I encourage you to, and I, you and I chatted this a little bit about this as well, put this high up on the list, and I encourage it, I support it, encourage it, and it's great for Minnesota, and it's the right thing to do for our airport, keep them viable, and continue to be an economic engine for our great state of Minnesota. So I just encourage those encouraging words, and thank you, Representative Joachim, for your leadership on this.
Thank you very much. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just want to thank Representative Joachim for this bill, and I think this is a great great piece of legislation. I think on top of that, the action we heard a bill earlier, which has been my bill with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota, is I think some of the language that's involved in this on a broader scale, not the specific projects, is included in my bill that we carried. And, you know, once again, I think, you know, it is an economic driver, the airport. And I think, you know, these opportunities we have to create investment and continue the upgrading so that we're a competitive hub. The last thing we want is for Delta to be pulling out. And I think any tool in the toolbox we give to the airport commission or whomever that might be, or cities or schools across the state, is a positive thing. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to echo the comments of my colleagues. When I ran the Economic Club of Minnesota before I was a legislator, we worked closely with the Airports Commission on several items, and I can't stress enough how important a strong hub here in Minneapolis is to our global competitiveness. We would be St. Louis or Kansas City or other cities if we did not have direct flights all over the globe out of MSP. And so since this is the first time they've come to request help from the state, I hope that we can make this a priority as well. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Representative McDonald, I see your hand up. Are you asking for recognition again?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just real quickly, I forgot to say thank you, Mr. Chair, to Mr. Killian. I've had an opportunity the last 5 or 6 years as a photographer to travel the country and land in many airports. And Minneapolis Airport really is one of the best, truly is. Keep up the good work. And we certainly will do our best to help you out this year. But wonderful airport. Always a pleasure to go there, even in long lines. But it's still a great to go to the airport. So keep up the good work. Thank you.
Very good. I think this bill is really taking off today. So with that, Representative Detmer, anything more to add? I mean, I think we're soaring right now.
That's an ouch.
I do have a quick comment, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And I did also spoke with Mr. Killian, and I commended the Airport Commission for what they do for our veterans as they come and go through different flights. I know the Veterans Service Center there is a great center. It's a brand new center. I was there for the opening of it. And so it's a great area for those men and women that are coming and leaving to relax and have a little peace and quiet before they head off to their next mission. And thank you, Representative Joachim, for sponsoring the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hertoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think you're right. I think this bill is taking off. And
Representative Hertoff, you're cutting out a little bit on us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I said thank you for your comments about this bill taking off. And another avionic metaphor, it appears the bill has more lift than it has drag.
Well put, Representative Hertaus. Thank you. I think, Representative Joachim, I see no further questions. Any closing comments?
Just thank you for your time and attention today, Mr. Chair and members, and your comments. As you've all reiterated, the MSP Airport plays a critical role in Minnesota's economy. We have a stake in their success. This is just one small thing we can do to help. So thank you for your support.
Thank you. Thanks for all the members' comments. Mr. Killian, thank you so much for your testimony and the work you do out there. And Representative Joachim for bringing this forward. And Representative Joachim renews her motion to lay over House File 1813 for possible inclusion into the House on this tax bill. Thank you. Next up, we have House File 1909, Chair Davids. Chair Davids, would you like to move your bill? And I know we have an amendment also.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move House File 1909. And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the amendment to get the bill in the shape I would like it.
Very good. Chair Davids offers the A1 amendment. Chair Davids, any comments on that? It's just to put it into proper order at this time.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Any comments on that? If not, we're going to take a vote on the A1 amendment, the House File 1909. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The A1 amendment is adopted. Two-year bill, Chair Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This would allow a pass-through entity allowed to file and pay taxes. Maybe we could have nonpartisan staff describe it. Then I have one witness, Beth Kuhn from the chamber, that would like to testify on behalf. And I'm not aware of any opposition to the bill. I can't imagine there would possibly be any. Maybe we could have staff start us out here.
Very good. Mr. Clayman.
Sure. Well, Mr. Chair and members, House File 1909, this is a salt cap deduction workaround bill. So it's very similar to the C option tax bill that was heard in this committee last year. And, you know, essentially what this bill and what the C option tax bill does is it allows a partnership to file and pay, to elect to file and pay a partnership or pass-through entity level tax. They'd still have to file an individual return. When the individual partner does file the individual return, they receive, in the case of this bill as amended, a credit for the amount of tax they paid under the partnership tax, or a subtraction, which is how the C option tax bill does it. And so for House File 1909, that ends up being a wash for tax purposes. The revenue effect is neutral. But what it allows is for the individual partners to deduct the full amount of tax that they paid on their partnership income as a business tax under the federal state and local tax deduction. And for background, in 2017, Congress limited that state and local tax deduction, the SALT deduction, to $10,000. But that doesn't apply to business taxes. So that's what House File 1909 does.
Very good. Chair Davids, anything you wanted to add to that description?
No, I think you did a very good job on that.
Very good. So we do have one testifier, Beth Kuhn. So Ms. Kuhn, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
And if you'd please introduce yourself and please proceed. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you to Representative Davids for authoring this bill. I'm Beth Kuhn, representing the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We're an organization of 6,300 businesses across the state of Minnesota that employ over 500,000 Minnesotans. The vast majority of our members are small and mid-sized businesses, and many of those businesses are pass-through entities that pay their business income taxes through their individual income tax return. We are in strong support of this bill. This provides a win-win-win, as we see it. It lowers tax burdens for Minnesota business taxpayers with no revenue loss to the state. It will also help improve Minnesota's competitiveness. Pass-through businesses make up the majority of Minnesota businesses, and they employ the majority of the private sector workforce. According to the Department of Revenue and the revenue estimate you have, 179,000 full-year residents reported income from S-Corp's partnership and limited liability corporations on their Minnesota individual income tax return. This option will help reduce tax burdens for those Minnesota pass-through businesses by lowering their federal tax burden. It'll be a great option for many businesses that were most severely impacted by the SALT cap imposed at the federal level in the 2017 bill. According to the revenue estimate, 42,500 taxpayers with business income was impacted by that $10,000 federal, state, and local cap. For an itemizer in the top federal tax bracket, the SALT deduction cap raised the tax price of state taxes by almost 60%. So this was a huge impact on a lot of our businesses. As you know, the impact of the SALT cap was a bigger issue in Minnesota and other high-tax states. This election will now treat pass-through entities similar to C corporate taxpayers, allowing them to have all their business expenses fully the taxes are allowed to be deductible as a business expense on their federal returns. This bill's received strong bipartisan support in the past. I know there had been concerns from the Department of Revenue in the past, but we're hoping those were no longer there since the IRS did rule this fall that they are allowing these provisions at the state level. Other states, including Wisconsin, have passed similar proposals. So we're hoping this will be the year that we can finally actually get this enacted in Minnesota and help our pass-through entities with this really great election for them to choose. So thank you again. We'll be looking forward to working with nonpartisan staff to see if there's any additional amendments that might be needed to help with any additional administrative concerns. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Cadoon. And I also want to say we do have two letters of support, one from the Parity for Main Street Employers and also one from the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Any questions, members, for the testifier or the author of the bill? Seeing none, Chair Davids, thanks for bringing this forward. Do you have any closing statements?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman, and I want to thank the Chamber, the NFIB, and all the groups that have provided their support. This is still a bit of a work in progress. I think we have things the way they need to be to make this work. If not, I'll work closely with the Department of Revenue to correct any issues that may arise, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Chairman, I would move that House File 1909 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you very much, Chair Davids, for bringing this forward. Very good. Members, we've got about 9 minutes left. There is one more bill, and if we don't get through it, that's fine. I'm not going to rush this if we don't have to, and we can come back and finish it another time. But I'm going to turn the floor over to Representative Westlegard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The final bill on the agenda is House File 1019 from Chair Marquardt. Chair Marquardt, would you like to move your bill?
Very good. So I'd like to move House File 1019 to be laid over for possible inclusion into the House Omnibus Tax Bill. Members, of course, a major goal in Tax Committee this year has been accountability and transparency to the taxpayer. And what this bill would do is bring tax expenditures, and I know this committee knows about tax expenditures, it would bring those tax expenditures into the budget process. And so before I go into what the bill does, I really want to thank Representative Gomez. Representative Gomez spent a lot of time in the development of this bill, so thank you so much for that. And this is, you know, nothing new, really. This has been around for some time, but what this does, it sets up a tax expenditure review commission. And what it will do is in the first 3 years, it would look at all 312 tax expenditures and just basically look at purpose statements and metrics to how to measure that. And then after those initial 3 years, they then would start looking at tax expenditures over a 10-year rotation so that they would get to every tax expenditure at least once every 10 years. And so the committee, this commission would have 9 people. It would have 4 members from the Senate, 2 from the majority, 2 from minority, 2 members of the House, 2 majority, 2 minority, and a designee from the Department of Revenue. And so this committee would meet. They would look at all of these various expenditures. And what they would do is they'd have to have a report by December 15th of the year that would go to the respective tax committees in the House and the Senate. And then these tax committees in the next year would have to hear the bill. And so this committee, as they look at a tax expenditure, could look at its effectiveness, could look at its tax incidence, could look at, you know, what would it be if it was revenue neutral? They could compare it to a direct expenditure, and they can make recommendations. So they could recommend to modify, repeal, or continue. But what the committee does not do, it does not say, all right, we put these 5 out there, and if the legislature doesn't act, they go away. No, they can make recommendations, but it still leaves what is finally done to the legislature. So let me just see if there's other things we need to cover on this. The cost would be about, it would be staffed by the Legislative Budget Office. That would be about 6 employees, and then some of the data would be backed up by the Department of Revenue, and they anticipate a 1.2 employee. So the total cost of this is $950,000 in the first biennium, because basically 1 year, and then about 960,000 every year afterwards. It also says that any new or expiring tax expenditure would have to have an 8-year expiration or sunset. And then it also changes the timing for both the tax incident report and the budget tax expenditure budget report, so that both of them would be in the even numbered years. So we would have that information when we come back in a new session in the odd numbered year. So members, that's basically the bill, but you know, it would help bring tax expenditures back, you know, into the light, into the budget process where we could actually analyze those. So members, I'm open for questions.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Members, any questions? I see Representative Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Marquardt, for bringing this bill. I am someone who really cares about this issue, and I think it's a very good start. I did have a couple questions based on my experience many years ago, so I'm sure it's changed, but I used to work in the Congress, and we had 5-year rolling review of major budget and tax legislation, and it was not done with the aid of commission. It was just part of the committee's work, the Committee of Jurisdiction, and then it was brought before the body. And so I'm wondering why we need this extra commission to do this work. And also, because it's a legislative commission, I'm wondering why we need to, I get why the Commissioner of Revenue would be there, but would the Commissioner have a vote? Thank you.
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Robbins. To the first question, I'll take the last one. I mean, as far as having the Department of Revenue, there certainly would be involved with that, and certainly the makeup, you know, there's nothing set in stone, but with that, of course, that would change with who the governor would be and so forth. But I think it's important that the Department of Revenue would be involved, because they end up doing a lot of these reports and just having the expertise and so forth. But one thing that's important is that really for anything to move forward, and it would just be a recommendation anyway, you would have to have, you know, kind of a pretty bipartisan support to really move things through. The second part of it is, why can't the committee do that? This is going to be an awful lot of work, and I just don't see where the tax committee, with everything else going on, especially a lot of work being done out of session, I just think it's a lot of work that would have to be done, and I don't know if the standing committee could do it justice, especially as they're reviewing, you know, 312 in the first 3 years, and then every 10 years doing, you know, whatever, how many they'd have to do. So I just think it's a matter of workload. And also, I think the quality of what you will get out of it this way is going to be better.
Representative Robbins, does that answer your question? If so, and if you have any further, I would ask if Chair Marquardt would just like to lay this bill on the table to conclude, so we can get done in a timely manner and we can pick it up tomorrow, if possible.
Thank you, Mr. No further questions.
Chair Marquardt?
Well, thank you very much. And I am certainly willing, and Representative Gomez, to work with other members on this as we move this forward. But this is, I think, a good way in which to do this. So I would just ask members for the support and lay this over for possible inclusion into the House Tax Omnibus Bill, House File 1019.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Representative Marquardt renews his motion to that House File 1910 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and that the bill be laid over. Members, thank you, and for your work today. It was a good, robust conversation, and we are now adjourned.